I have resided in St. John for 99% of my life, obviously, as many people my age have done. I have explored other parts of our wonderful country, but I've always been brought back home. I am a healthcare worker. I am currently very involved in labor activism and making sure that individuals in our labor system and in our workforce are always respected, always given the best possible scenario for themselves and their families. And when it comes down to it, I'm just generally truly invested in my community. It's where I've grown up, and it's where I plan to spend the rest of my life. And I want to make sure that the future that I have to look forward to, along with the future that everyone in this riding has to look forward to, is full of prosperity, full of success, and honestly, just full of life.
So, Don, what made you want to be part of the NDP in particular? What stood out to you about that party?
So I have to go back a little bit. In 2011, as many know, Jack Layton, who was the leader of the New Democratic Party of Canada, really just swept across the country. And he didn't do it built on lies or deception. He did it built on the fact that every single individual had a voice. You know, I'm a member of the LGBTQ community. I am also mixed race myself, and I grew up living here in one of the poorest areas of the country. I myself grew up in poverty, and Mr. Layton really inspired me at a young age to feel that I had an opportunity to make a difference on an individual level, that I truly had an opportunity to have my voice heard, even though there were so many voices at that point in my life that were saying, the bricks are stacked against you, and your voice isn't as relevant as someone who makes $1 million a year, as someone who already sits in our House of Commons or in our legislative buildings. And truly, it inspired me to get into politics in general, and to start paying attention to the world around me. But more so, it pulled me towards the NDP because I felt that I had a place there and that they truly were the party that represented the common people.
Now, of course, we're about the midway point through the election campaign as we speak here. Now, what have you been hearing from constituents, both, I guess, as you go door to door, or whether you're talking to them on the phone or through social media?
Absolutely. And honestly, Brad, the answers that I'm getting when I say, you know, what's important to you during this election period, or more so when they're coming to me and saying, this is what is important to me during this election and what I need going forward, it all surrounds affordability. Affordability, I like to look at as a complete umbrella. Too often, previous Liberal and Conservative governments have focused their pinpoint direction on individual issues. You know, you're going to hear from different constituents that, you know, they're having problems with mental health issues, that they're having problems with health care issues, that they're having problems with affordable housing or being able to survive, and they need a livable income, things like that. And truly, I don't want to focus on just one thing. And so what I'm hearing from a lot of individuals as I'm speaking to them is, ultimately, life is just not affordable. In one of the, like I mentioned before, one of the poorest areas of this entire country, we have the highest rate of child poverty right here in our own city. And people don't want just a Band-Aid. They want true solutions. They want long-term solutions. And that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that people can't afford to rent, that young people have no future when they look forward and see the opportunities to buy homes, that individuals that are looking to enter our post-secondary education areas, they look forward and they say, you know, I don't see a future for me here because I can't afford tuition, or I'm terrified to come out with $10,000 worth of student debt. Seniors that are struggling paycheck to paycheck, that are living off of what many would consider not even the minimum wage, and also have to then come up with money to afford their medications, which as we get older, as a healthcare worker, I recognize can become more and more and more. And this is what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that people need complete solutions. They don't need Band-Aids on individual issues. They need affordability and poverty addressed as a whole.
Now, you mentioned healthcare. That kind of leads into my next question. Of course, healthcare has been under the microscope recently, especially amid the pandemic. New Brunswick's facing a huge shortage of nurses and physicians. Now, understanding that it is up to provinces to inevitably deliver the health care itself, what would you do to help address this?
You know, that's a really good question. And we have been hearing from the start of this election, and even before, specifically from our Liberal government, that jurisdiction gets in the way. And I'm here to tell you that my belief is jurisdiction is only an issue when we allow jurisdiction to be an issue. Do I have the authority as a member of parliament to go in and revamp a provincial health care system? At this current moment, no, I do not. But does that mean that I just let it fail? No. It is the responsibility of every level of government to support, encourage, and pressure them to change things so that they work in the best interest of the people. So when we're talking about health care and we're talking about this nursing shortage, I'm part of that workforce. I work in nursing. I work in health care. I work in our city's health departments. And I day in and day out, I see the struggle of the people of St. John Rosay as they're coming in, and they have long wait times in our hospitals. It is an easy fix if we're willing to all come to the table and work together, provincial and federal governments. And when we're talking about funding, that comes a lot from our federal government. We need to look at our health transfer payments. We need to look at getting the cost out of the individual person's pocket. We need to stop talking about things like privatization. It needs to be taken completely off the table, because I think we've all seen across this country, when we're talking about long-term care, that taking the profit out of long-term care is really what's needed. Private health care does not benefit anyone except for the already wealthy. In order to address the staffing shortage, we need to encourage people to enter that workforce. We need to encourage people to enter that form of education by getting rid of things like student debt and the fears around it. We need to make sure we are encouraging our young people to enter the health sector. We need to make sure that we are supporting them when they enter it by getting rid of violence in the workplace, by creating stricter labor laws for the employers to make sure that our workers are supported. But more so beyond any of that, we need to make sure that we are encouraging people to stay healthy before the need arises to go to our hospitals, to go to our health centers. We need to put in place programs like universal pharmacare, universal dental care, so that people can take care of the issues at the root and they don't have to wait until it becomes a life emergency and end up overburdening our healthcare system. Those are the things that we need to do at a federal level to bring people out of the healthcare system that don't need to be there and refill our healthcare system with the workers that do.
Now, over the past year as well, amid the pandemic, you know, many businesses have been struggling. Some have been forced to close. Others have been forced to lay off the majority of their staff. What would you and the NDP do to support them as we eventually come out the other side of this pandemic?
That's a really simple question, because we've already been doing it. Now, obviously, I have not been sitting in the House of Commons, but my NDP colleagues have already been doing the legwork, Brad. They have already pushed during this pandemic for things like the CERB and doubling it from $1,000 to $2,000 a month to make sure that people have a livable income. When you bring people up to a livable income, be it through wage subsidy, be it through universal income, be it through, you know, looking at our old age pension systems and such, that's how you give people more buying power. That's how you give people the ability to increase their economic impact. And in turn, it's going to help our small businesses. Our NDP colleagues in Ottawa during the last parliament, they put forward motions to help small businesses retain employees. We put forward ideas and concrete plans for things like universal pharmacare and dental care, I go back to, because then it takes it out of the cost of the individual employer. It means that they can hire more people. When we're talking about actually supporting on a direct level small business and businesses around our city, I think the big thing is we need to look at population growth. We need to start directly talking to these individuals and saying, you know, where are your struggles? Because the thing is, no government should be working on behalf of the people. Every government should be working with the people.
Now, this is something that you touched on a bit earlier in our conversation. Affordable housing has become a huge concern across the country, including here in New Brunswick. And I mean, year over year, New Brunswick saw the largest increase in average rent prices. What would you do to help address that and help those who are having a hard time trying to find affordable housing?
I've always been on a grassroots level an activist. I've always fought for the common person, and I will always fight for the common person, regardless of the results of this election. I attended a wonderful rally in St. John, just a few months ago about altering the New Brunswick Tenancies Act. Now, that is a New Brunswick. That is a provincial legislation. That needs to be addressed on a provincial level. But as a member of parliament, I will continue to pressure our provincial government from a different realm. I will continue to put pressure on our Department of Social Development and our premier themselves to make sure that housing is at the forefront of everyone's mind. The other thing is, we will take housing out of the hands of the individuals that are using it for profit. We will make sure that housing is truly treated as a human right. And when we're talking about constructing and building affordable housing, the big thing is making sure that affordable does not take away from livable. We need to continue to support these homes as we move forward. An NDP government, along with myself, within 10 years, will build 500,000 affordable homes. Within that first 5 years, we guarantee that 50% of them will be built. We also want to look at, again, removing student debt so we can encourage more individuals to join the labor force, to join, construction-type teams, to join trades, so that we have individuals to build these homes. And I go back to something that I just said about making sure that affordable doesn't mean not livable. In our current city, affordable housing are neglected. They are allowed to break down. We have people who are living with holes in their ceiling, mold in their closets. That is not affordable. Affordability means that it is affordable financially, but that it is livable when it comes to our health, safety, and security.
And lastly, as you're aware and as everyone else is aware, you know, there's a recent study that just came out from the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which sounded a code red for humanity, warning that global warming is dangerously close to spiraling out of control. What would you and the NDP do to help address climate change?
You know, I've been told by a number of media outlets that the NDP has one of the strongest, most sustainable climate change policies out of all parties. And I'll share some of those with you. Some of the things that we're looking to incorporate into our climate change plans starts with taking subsidies away from the oil and gas industries. It does not make sense for a government to stand in front of Canadians and say, we are for climate action and fighting against the climate crisis. And that's what it needs to be treated as, a crisis. And then they go and they buy a pipeline or they subsidize oil and gas industries. We will end that. On top of doing the bureaucratic stuff of ending subsidies, we are looking to implement programs such as creating the production of Canadian-made, while we're building green jobs, Canadian-made electric vehicles, and making sure that the function of electric vehicles is easily accessible across this country. We have promised that if elected, we will put in place a ban on all gas and oil-powered vehicles by 2035. That is a very close target, but it is very achievable because in the process of tackling climate change, we will make sure that we are investing in green energy. And I'm here to tell you that things like, small module reactors and the nuclear sector, that is not green. Talking about buying a pipeline to make sure that we can afford climate change, that is not green. Continuing to subsidize the oil and gas industry, that is not green. We live in a beautiful area of the country with the highest and most powerful tides in the world, and we need federal investment to harness that power and use it towards green energy production while creating green jobs. Because at the base, we need to make sure that we are supporting Canadians during this transition, specifically the workers of the oil and gas industry. So we need to make sure we are encouraging them and giving them opportunities without impacting their livelihoods to transition into new, green-focused, well-paid jobs. Because there is no point putting policy out there if you do not have the buy-in from the general population of Canada. So we need to make sure that we create a situation where it is enticing to the common Canadian, the common resident of St. John Rosse, to take part in these transitions and make sure that it is sustainable both as a country, as an environment, and on an individual constituent level.